This is the Management 291 podcast, Surviving Organizational Behavior, produced by thegovernanceproject.org. Welcome to the Management 291 podcast, Michael.
Hi, Anthony. Good to be here this morning.
Yeah, it's a big day for both of us. It's my first podcast.
My first podcast, too.
Yeah, so it's been a bit of an adventure and a bit of an organization getting here, I have to say.
Absolutely, but organization is not strange territory for either one of us. We're both adjunct professors of international management here at MUDEC, also known as the Miami University Delabois European Center. And today we're going to be talking about organizational behavior, but maybe before we get into that, a little bit of background. Anthony, what's your experience?
Me, I'm lifelong career banker, always working on projects, project financings and structured finance and such like before I turned to compliance in 2004, and have since become very much focused on compliance, governance and ethics in the organization. And you are a prominent lawyer.
I am a lawyer, indeed, a lawyer by training, also with some significant experience working in an international banking organization. And now back in the law firm environment, advising clients on governance and other issues relevant to their organizations. So I think between the two of us, hopefully we'll bring two different perspectives to this course.
Yeah.
We'll be relying on your book, Surviving Organizational Behavior, which is a particularly relevant title. Survival is the name of the game in organizational behavior, and hopefully that'll become clear.
Yeah, and I mean, what we're trying to do as well with this podcast is to, first of all, bring the subject alive. So we're going to go through a series of podcasts, which will be organized following the same structure of the course, the same structure of the book. So chapters 1 and 2 we're going to cover today, which is about organization and organizational behavior, in order to help create a better understanding for our students to enable a better discussion in class and to bring up-to-date relevance to the subject.
One of the things I'd like to try and do over these podcasts is talk about what's going on in the news and how that relates to our course. It's 2019, and we actually benefit from a lot of transparency today in terms of what's happening in organizations. We can really use that as a laboratory to see where certain organizations are having success and where others are struggling.
Yeah, and of course we're going to try probably to avoid too much scandal, try not to make too much reference to outright politics or religion, which are, let's say, sensitive topics in the sense that they are emotional topics rather than functional topics. So we'll see how we manage to stick to that.
And while we're at it, obviously I am a lawyer, so it would be disappointing if there was no disclaimer. But clearly... Clearly, all of our views and comments made in these podcasts are our own views and comments and are not the views or opinions shared of our employers, our previous employers, or anyone else we associate with. They're really for the purposes of this discussion.
I knew there was a good reason for having you in this podcast.
That's right.
Yeah, we're just two individuals musing over the workings of the world.
Right. So first up, chapter one is the organization. Why is that chapter one?
Well, I think if you just have a look at the news, what's been hitting the news this last week or so?
It's been a busy week. There have been some massive fines levied or about to be levied against both Facebook and British Airways, Marriott Hotel Group around personal data protection, and organizations really struggling to contain that damage. It's been a major theme this week in the news.
Mm-hmm. Because the common denominator behind all of these huge headlines is that they are organizations. They're massive, and the fact of the matter is that none of them would have been in the headlines if it wasn't for the fact that people have established organizations to be able to take a dream, a vision, an objective, and actually start to make things happen. And of course, when you make things happen, if you don't organize well,
yeah, no, and I think organizations are a bit of an artificial construct. Various individuals get together and do things. There's no obligation to create a company. And we do see examples of organizations which are much more ad hoc than what we typically think of. So if you think about the Wall Street protests, or even the protesters in Hong Kong in the past weeks.
Mm-hmm.
For the last year in France, we've seen the Gilets Jaunes, the Yellow Vests movement. And I actually read this morning there's a group of about 1 million Facebook users who are putting together plans to storm Area 51. So there are various ways that you can be organized, but certainly it is 2019, and in the age of social media, having an organization doesn't seem to be a requirement. There are groups of people coming together in very different ways than what we've seen before.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I mean, if you look at, in terms of what are people trying to achieve, as you said, you have informal organizations and you have formal organizations. And if we look at the Wall Street protests, they were famous because there was no coordinating committee. They had their own sign language in mass meetings to denote whether people were going swinging one way or another way. But they had no formal leader. They had no formal agenda even. The only thing they wanted to do was to bring attention to the fact that there was something called the 1%. The agenda of the Gilets Jaunes, the Yellow Vests, it started off being a simple protest against diesel taxes and suddenly escalated into all kinds of what was wrong with society kind of protests. And that was also went completely out of control. Now, both of them had certain results, but they had unpredictable results. And although I think people who organized the Yellow Vests, for example, and there's still some pockets of those protests going on, it's just really been a way to say we're out protesting in the streets about something that we don't like that's going on in society. So it's rather anarchical in some ways, as opposed to what we get. For example, take a very simple situation of what are we going to have for dinner tonight? Let's order pizza. Who's going to find the menu? What are we going to do? Who's going to take down the notes for what the orders are? Who's going to be allocated the task of calling up and ordering the pizzas? And who's going to end up going out and getting the pizzas? That is a very informal, very simple form of organization. But we form organizations all the time. But we have specific purposes, and then we have those that just basically happen in a much more anarchical way.
Well, I think that's right, and we clearly gravitate towards organizations because over time we've realized as a society that we're able to generate desired results. And indeed, for the more ad hoc organizations that I mentioned, the protest movements and etc., it's difficult sometimes to see the tangible results that come out of those. And I think human beings naturally, you know, gravitate towards structure. Again, I'll put my lawyer hat on. You know, we have laws and we have rules and we have regulations. Why do we have these? We have these because they provide us with certainty and they provide us with an understanding of what the consequences of certain actions will be. An interesting sort of comparison to the legal world there.
You know, people have to be held to account, and without an organization in some form or other for society as well as organizations, you're not going to arrive at those points. So it also highlights how organizations don't always succeed, and just simply by being organized doesn't mean you're guaranteed success.
Yeah, and those cases that you mentioned are good examples because, and we'll talk about this in a minute, you know, why do organizations exist? But I think everyone can agree that no one at British Airways set out to pay the UK government $183 million in terms of a fine. There's no one inside that organization that would have wanted that. They may not always agree on their priorities, but you know that certainly wasn't one of them. So you really have to ask yourself, how does such a sophisticated and complex organization like that get to that point, which must have been so far from strategy?
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly, organizations are made up of, effectively, two things. One is governance, the rules and regulations that govern the conduct of decision-taking within the firm, and the people that are within it. So either can fail. So if you have a poor governance that doesn't actually make sure that you get the right people coming to the right table at the right time, you're setting yourself up for trouble. And we see that every day in almost every business. There's situations which we plan for, which we organize for, that we have procedures for, and then something always comes in from the left or the right and disrupts everything, and suddenly it's, oh my goodness, how do we deal with this situation? It happens time and time again. And then it's so important to have the right people on board. And how do you make sure you get the right people on board? That they're competent, that they're able to handle situations, that they're able to take the right decisions. How do you make them understand what is expected of them in terms of getting the right decisions? People make mistakes all the time, assuming they're doing the right thing, when in fact they're getting an outcome which is contrary to what the organization actually wants them to achieve.
Well, let's just talk about that for a minute. I mean, what is it that the organization is meant to achieve? I assume, you know, running an airline, it's to fly passengers around. But I suppose there could be instances where you've got some conflicting views on what the goals of an organization might be.
Well, it's funny that you say that. As you know, I often have conversations and facilitate discussions with executives and company directors. And one of my favorite questions to start off with is, why does your organization exist? And can you guess what the answer I get 9 times out of 10 is?
I feel like it's going to be related to money.
You're probably right. Because it's always about, oh, we're here to make profits, we're here to maximize returns to shareholders. And you can probably also get what my favorite answer to that response is.
Go for it.
Okay, well, I basically said, no, you're totally wrong. It's completely, you missed the point entirely. Because if you are just focused on making money, making a profit, how are you going to do that? How are you going to be able to consistently ensure that you're going to produce monetary results to justify the investments that shareholders have put into the company? Effectively, what we're talking about is profits are actually not an end in itself. Profits are only a key performance indicator.
Well, I'm going to challenge you there a little bit, because ultimately, from a shareholder perspective, really, I think that's what shareholders are looking at. They're looking at their price per share and what their dividend is going to be. So it seems difficult to ignore profits from this equation.
When you're talking about portfolio of shares, you're probably absolutely right. But if you're talking about a situation where you are investing in a company to set up, let's say, a new venture, you're not going to look at Michael Schweiger and say, oh, I'm going to give you lots of money, give me lots of money in return. You're going to ask a lot more questions about, well, how are you going to make that money? And if you answer that question at the very basis, at the very start, at the very commencement of the idea of the company, you're talking about the social or the commercial value that you're producing in your product or your service. That is what your company purpose is. If you don't succeed in creating value and you don't know what that value is, then if you're just focusing on profit, the only thing you're going to end up doing is you're going to start going for efficiency, cutting costs, increasing sales to maybe a point where you can't maintain the quality anymore. You're going to start losing in terms of credibility with your customers and your suppliers. You're going to start failing.
Okay, so you're saying it's about creating value, not profits. So aside from having a clear idea of what the goals should be, maybe we should talk a little bit about how we get there. You mentioned people. If we're focused on creating value and not profits, how do we make sure that everyone in the organization understands that?
The first thing you have to do is to make sure everybody is going to get onto the right page. You may have set up an organization and you may have hired the very best people, but you have to make them behave in a way that supports the creation of the value, the achievement of the objective that you set for the firm. That means you have to be very, very clear as to what the purpose is. If everybody thinks the only thing that matters around here is to earn as much money as possible at the end of the quarter, that's what people will focus on. If that's where your incentive systems are set up to reward people only for hitting the targets, they will not care about the quality of the outcome. The only thing they'll look at is, are we actually hitting the numbers? So you have to make sure that everybody from the board of directors down to the periphery of the activities of the company, who are people who are out in the shops serving the customers, everybody understands it's the quality, or it's the price, or it's the experience that we're delivering, which is the value that is represented by this organization. And that they focus on those things, because everyone has to focus on it, because if they don't, the organization will start pulling in different directions and you will start losing in terms of performance.
So I have to say, I mean, that all sounds great. And most corporate websites today have a fantastic sort of vision statement, which is done by a very good marketing team. But you know, if you're a junior employee in the organization making an entry level wage, how much do you really care every day about the vision statement that's on your corporate website? I mean, I suppose on one hand, you know, it's comforting and everyone wants to work for a company that has a good vision, but at the end of the day, most people just need to make their rent payment.
True, but I think it makes a huge difference. If you're going in just to earn your pay packet, especially if it's a minimal pay packet maybe, you're going to be wanting to get out of there as quickly as possible. You're not going to feel any kind of loyalty to producing the kind of result the firm wants to produce in terms of customer experience. So you need to make sure that they get excited about the idea of working there. Being excited about being at the place of work doesn't come just by itself. The number of times I've talked to company directors or executives and I've asked them, you know, to repeat the vision, maybe if it's short, they've been able to tell me what the vision is. But most of the time, a lot of these people who sit in these positions, they consider somehow the values of the company, the vision of the company to be PR exercises. And they're not dedicated to it. And if they're not dedicated to it, they don't act in accordance with it themselves. And if they, at the top of the organization, the people who are the role models, the ambassadors for the purpose and the values, the way we do business around here in the organization, everyone else is going to ignore it as well. But if you see people who are really excited about what they do and what their company is up to, you'll see a totally different dedication to the company and a greater, much greater willingness to go the extra mile.
Okay, so I think what this means is we should probably start talking about human and social capital, because ultimately that's what's going to get us there. So human capital, obviously everyone's familiar with. This is what I call the CV and interview, basically, contents of any employee. This is what an employee brings to the table in terms of their technical skills, their abilities, but also, you know, who they are, what their motivation is, their personality. I think that's the easy part, which again, you can probably identify through most HR screening processes. But maybe you could talk us through social capital a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as you said, human capital is all about making sure that you've got the right people in the right place with the right mentality to perform and deliver the product that you are going to deliver. So the first thing you have to do is to make sure, of course, that if, let's say, you're in a very disciplined area of science, pharmaceutical industries, or even banking or aerospace, you need to have people who are got great attention to detail, who, I'm talking in generalizations, of course, but people who have got attention to detail, who are disciplined, who want to see things through to the last checkpoint. If you're in a, let's say, creative architecture firm, you want people who have imagination, who enjoy being without any kind of restrictions in terms of how they express themselves and experiment. So you can have learning organizations or just organizations that you just want to be very, very disciplined in delivering a consistent and safe outcome. So once you've decided that you've got those people together, then you have to start thinking about, okay, how do I now make all of these individuals who are brilliant employees, how do I make them interact with each other to make sure that we don't just work in silos, but that we actually work together, sharing knowledge, sharing experiences, helping each other, working towards the same objective. We basically have to start thinking about how can we put up different instances within our organization where people have the opportunity to interact in a constructive way that serves, let's say, the embeddement of the company.
Right, and I think that kind of behavior that you're describing isn't really a nice to have or isn't really something that just improves either the employee experience or the customer experience. It's really something that essentially brings additional value the organization that you can't get from the individual employees acting independently.
It is. And I think, you know, one thing which will be clear to everybody once they've finished this course is that you and I certainly believe, and I think organizational behavior school of management believes, that diversity is a big asset, that we get lots of different kinds of personalities, people from different backgrounds, different experiences, different kinds of competencies. That means that we're going to bring together people who wouldn't necessarily bump into each other every day. We're deliberately creating, if you like, the potential for misunderstandings, because you're a lawyer, I'm a banker, we don't necessarily agree on everything. We don't necessarily come at problems in the same way. But by having a mechanism whereby we bring people together in an organized fashion, we create a form of conflict which becomes functional, which becomes productive, because we take away the distrust of situations by having proper social networks and by having proper social capital arrangements, so that people actually exchange views in a constructive and creative manner rather than misunderstanding, getting on their high horse, refusing to cooperate and collaborate with others.
And that's not to say it's always easy, and it definitely takes effort, but I fully agree that when you bring a couple of different opinions into the mix, and that's very much what we're trying to do in this course, you do end up getting some unique ideas and a good debate. And even if decisions end up being the same decisions which were proposed at the outset, the exercise of being challenged and rethinking your thought process is a really healthy one.
Mm-hmm. So I think, we've talked about the organization, how it's a natural thing, how it can be informal or formal, and how without organization, we're going to be disorganized and therefore not able to deliver and achieve perhaps some pretty lofty ambitions when you look at the way in which even politics works. If you look at a number of countries, I'm not going to go into politics now, but recently we've seen a lot of disturbance and dissatisfaction and distrust growing with politicians in Europe as in the US. And you can identify it back down to there's something wrong with the governance processes right now, and maybe about the people too, but that's a different story. And then we talk about the people. We need to have frameworks for organizing ourselves. We need to have the right people, and we need to make sure that these people are able to grow in their organizations, believe in what they're doing, and also interact with each other in productive and creative ways. And that's effectively, in some sort of summary, what organizational behavior means, isn't it?
No, that's right. So I think today what we've agreed on, at least, is it probably makes sense to have organizations. And we've identified that there's certainly going to be some complexity around those. And what we'll get into next week is how do we now take the organizations that we've decided are a good idea to have and make them function effectively. And so I think probably what we'll start with in the next podcast next week is how do we take decisions, who takes decisions, and how do we feel that the decisions being taken inside of an organization are the right ones.
Exactly, because at the crux of the matter, every day, in every way, we face decisions all the time. Do we take the right ones, the wrong ones? Do we consult? Do we just work on bias and prejudice? How do we do that? So it's going to be an interesting discussion next week. Thank you very much, Michael.
Thank you. See you next week.
Yeah, well organized.
That was the Management 291 podcast with Michael Schweimer and Anthony Smith-Meyer. Music by Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com. Thank you for listening.